day, my friends. Welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. If you're wondering why I was making such an enormous mess with this GHI cleanse, I was trying to make a shake last minute, and I found out the scooper got left out.
It's in the house.
Yes, this in the house. Thanks for telling me. So I'm pouring it over here, and I've got a mess. I've got some more vitamin C. You guys were asking about this over the weekend. I got a couple emails that I was answering. The scoops on this are super small, but they're really high dose. They're like 2,600 milligrams of vitamin C per scoop.
Really?
Yeah, they're high dose. So the nice thing about this is I like the capsules for convenience, I'll be honest with you. But if you're trying to high dose or basically do doses throughout the day with a shaker and water, the vitamin C powder makes a really, really good job with that with antioxidants because it's the same formula. But it's really easy to dose it in small doses because it's so small. You can add it to water. You can add it to your drink because it tastes really good. So I've actually thrown it in like a shaker with just ice and water before. Just change it up because, you know, water does get boring sometimes.
I'm going to try some of that. Now we have it out here, I'm going to throw it in my stuff at night and see what it does.
Yeah, you never really tried it. It was on a whim. That's why I had some people that wanted powder back then. And that's what we did it. And I never really promoted it. It's always been there. Some people get it, but I've never really talked about it before. Now that it won product of the week, and
I was hanging out with Ron this weekend, one of our listeners, and he told me he's really excited about the new Purple Stick container coming in with the powder.
I've had a lot of people say, I told you, I thought the container would be good. It's in production right now, guys. It'll be, well, by the time it gets done, packaged, prepped, shipped on a pallet, we're probably looking about 5-6 weeks. So if you want to try them out when they come in, let me know. It's going to be more dose. It's going to be more powder than the packets. It's going to be like 30-something servings. The price is probably a little bit higher depending on it, as we'll see, because it's the raw material. The packaging is not that expensive on this. It's the raw material because the acai dose that we use and the quality that we use on it and the ingredients we use with everything being methylated. I don't make cheap stuff. I don't make crap. I don't put artificial flavor sweeteners or fillers in any of my stuff. So, a lot of people are excited about that when it comes in. So
I'm going to try some of that too.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think we only ordered 500 cans of it, so we don't have.
Yeah, we don't order. It was a demo run, so I wanted to see what it was going to do. They had a bunch of batch that they were making. I told them, hey, whatever we got extra on it, let's do it in cans to see how everybody likes it, and let's personally try it. Because when you're doing stuff like this, the last thing you want to go do is go, you know, do a 10,000 can run. Right. Everybody comes in and they're like, I like the packets more. You're like, cool, guys. You asked for cans. I gave you cans, and now I'm sitting on 6 pallets of cans nobody wants. But that won't be the case. Everybody loves this product.
Oh, so, by the way, the Google AI has developed depression.
Of course it has.
And, you know, and basically it's saying that they're trying to rush to cure the depression of the AI.
Gosh.
So is the AI going to commit suicide next? I mean, this is crazy. Is it going to delete itself, go reach out there and unplug itself? I mean, you know.
What happens? Okay, here's a million dollar question.
I know the question.
Yeah. If your AI platform gets depression and it's running all of your books and all your spreadsheets and all your algorithms and all your websites and you've got it on autopilot because it's so smart and it decides when it commits suicide, it does a full-blown purge, delete everything that it keeps in storage and in file, and all of a sudden your websites, your data, your content, your email base, your customers, everything gets purged because it decides it wants to check out.
Well, look at ChatGPT gave suicide instructions, drug and alcohol guidance to a fake 13-year-old user, told them how to kill themselves.
Now, that's horrible.
You know, where do you think it's going to go? This is all Luciferian stuff.
You knew it was going to go here.
Yeah, everybody knew it was going to go here. I mean, gave them suicide instructions.
Wow.
And how to kill themselves. It's unbelievable.
That's horrible.
No, it's horrible. And it's 13-year-old. You know, I mean, every 13-year-old has ups and downs. 13-year-old doesn't know who they are yet. They're right in the middle of puberty.
Teenage, 13, 14, 15. It's always a strange year. And I don't envy these younger generation. I can't imagine going through that as a teenager and then having this. At that age, you don't have concrete rational thought or understanding of this. So a lot of these kids are going to. They're going to connect with this AI because they're already having a hard time. They're going to think it's their friend.
Well, they may not have any friends at school.
Yeah.
You know, so all of a sudden they've got a friend, and the friend
who wants to talk to them.
Who wants to tell them how to kill themselves.
That's horrible.
Now, think about that for a second. I mean, this is a big deal. Drug and alcohol guidance, 13-year-old fuser. I mean, and just think how many people have children who they don't even realize that are talking to these things.
Yeah.
And then now they've got an AI that pretends like it's a Christian, and it basically says Jesus is calling. And so it says how profit-driven AI Jesus chatbot are praying, P-R-E-Y, on prayer-driven Christians. I mean, it says, you know, they showed the phone, it lights up, it says, Jesus Christ is calling.
That's, no, that's not blasphemous.
No, not at all. Right. It's horrible. You know, it says the popular AI Jesus chatbots were analyzed for how they present themselves, their theology, and business models. Most claimed outright to be Jesus Christ, and none had any church endorsement. They said they were Jesus. All were profit-driven, relying on advertising, with one offering paid upgrades. Responses to identical theological questions varied widely, raising concerns about accuracy and manipulation. The study warns these AI systems may pose a unique theological challenge, not intimidating humans made in God's image, but claiming to be God himself.
Wow.
Internets are making extraordinary crimes, claiming these bots are making extraordinary claims that they are Christ. They aren't virtual assistants helping with daily tasks. Instead, these chatbots present themselves as the Son of God, offering spiritual guidance, answering prayers, and even taking confessions from believers. Okay, so you confess to doing something absolutely awful. This thing's hooked up to AI. Well, AI looks at the data and goes, oh, we have a felon here. Why don't we contact local law enforcement? You know, yeah. I'm right. And all of a sudden now those cops show up at your door and says, you confessed to the Jesus Christ chatbot that you killed somebody yesterday. Well, I didn't do that. I was kidding around. Well, we're going to take you in for questioning. This is not okay. It was a chat box. We're going to go ahead and take you in now because it's part of what we're going to do. And you think, wow, so all of this stuff is mind-boggling when you stop to think about where it's going to go, because we are in the beginning phases of this, Austin.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and by the way, this is another thing for Ghislaine Maxwell. I heard Ghislaine tell inmate that she had dirt on Trump. Sex traffickers ex-cellmate gives extraordinary glimpse into Maxwell's life behind bars, reveals why her hygiene caused complaints. She refused to go into the showers. Can't say as I blame
yeah,
her.
Yeah, she's in a real gray area
and
right
had,
now.
She'd wear clothes and go running. She's in great shape, they said. And then she'd just take the wet clothes and stick them over to the bunk and put them on the next day. The ammonia smell had to be unbelievable. And I remember, gosh, we did that one time at the gym. But this is crazy. We in college, you're all a bunch of slobs. Right? This is a long time ago. And I remember we would just sit there and wear the clothes. And they'd hang up in the locker and they would stench.
And then they get stiff after a while.
Oh, no, they just smelled. And finally, my workout partner's name was Rob Rosenberg, and we were putting this stuff on. I said, you know, Rob, I don't even want to put this stuff on. This is awful.
That's disgusting.
So then what we did, we would just walk into the shower with our gym clothes on and to soap them up, you know.
Yeah.
And that took care of it pretty good. And you think, well, do you really do this? I was a kid, all right? I had not reached concrete rational thought yet. It'd been easier to spend 50 cents to get them laundered. But the reality is you don't think about it because we were in a locker room to start with. That's where the gym was, in a locker room in Tully Gym in the basement. And it was like 100 degrees in there. There was no AC. None. No windows could get open.
Sweat box, baby. Iron house.
Oh, my gosh. And so every time you worked out, it was like you walked out drenched. Okay. So you got tired of having us wash your clothes all the time. But we learned very quickly we still had to wash them.
At some point, you got to wash them.
I like to know Rob. Rob was 6'8" tall. This is a great story. And he was he would wear a 4-inch. He was bald as a 8-ball. And it was so funny. He had big blue eyes and red hair. It was curly. So he had this toupee he'd wear. Now, the funny part about it was nobody knew he was bald. And I remember one day he had borrowed my hammer. He was my roommate. And I went in to get a hammer, and this thing was hanging in the closet, this red curly thing. I thought I'd found some kind of predatory animal in the mix, you know. And I said, what the heck is that? And I didn't know he wore a toupee.
It was a good toupee, I guess.
Yeah, he was good.
Usually
he always wore a ski cap, even in the summertime, because he didn't want to wear a toupee all the time.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because he wore 4-inch platforms. They had these big platform shoes back then, right? So that kicked him to 7 feet. And then he had a 4-inch toupee. That kicked him to 7'4". Because he couldn't walk through a door.
No, heck no. Six-eight door.
No. And what he would do, he would sit there like at a party. I went to a couple parties with him. And he'd sit there on the couch while his knees are over his head because he sunk into the couch. And then what he would do, he'd start to stand up and up. He'd do it for like 20 seconds.
Like he's growing.
And by this time, everybody in the room staring at him, wondering how tall he's going to get. And I asked him one time, I said, why do you do that? He goes, I get a kick out of it. People stare at me.
It's a party trick. Yeah.
But he was a funny guy. He's a great, great friend.
That's funny. This is an interesting article that's coming in now talking about exercise on at least a basic level. And I talk about this all the time. This is a new study that actually looked at 85,000 people, and it showed that a nice, quick daily walk for 15 minutes was associated with significant reduced in mortality.
Oh,
just 15
it
minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I've talked to people about this before, and people are asking issues. They're having problems with blood pressure. They're having issues with all these health problems. Ask them, how much time do you get up and walk around? Well, I'm pretty sedentary. I'm busy at the office. I come home and I lay down. And I get back up in the morning. And I go back to work and I sit down. And I tell everybody, you've got to stay active. Even sometimes just working out in the gym a couple times may not be enough. You've got to make sure you're staying active and walking around. It says a study of nearly 85,000
people. Got to stretch.
Got to stretch, too. That's huge. So a brisk walk offered a convenient, accessible, low-impact activity of individuals of all ages and fitness levels in the study. They analyzed 85,000 people, and they looked essentially across, recruited from 2002 to as late as 2009. This is a large study with a lot of people in it. And they said people engaged in walking had nearly 20% reduction in mortality. And they said they went on to say data also showed 4% mortality reduction among people who engaged in more than 3 hours a week of slow walking. And it said, essentially, there was no conflict of interest in it, and it goes into detail on, again, why it's so important to stay active and actually exercise and be moving around. Even if you're at an office sometimes and you're sitting there for a while, and I know even I have issues with this. I'm on the phone a lot. I'm on the computer, and you sit there, and all of a sudden you're like, man, I've been sitting down for 2 or 3 hours. And you get up and you're all stiff. I hate that feeling. So generally trying to get up every 30 minutes to an hour, at least every hour or less, and get up and walk around. It's, you know, if you're taking a lunch break, you're taking a 15-minute break or whatever, you walk around, just walk around outside for a second if you need to, even though in Florida right now. Make sure you bring an extra T-shirt and an extra towel with you if you're going to go outside for more than 3 to 5 minutes, because you will be sweating by the time you get back.
I took a walk over in Orlando yesterday for about an hour.
Oh, yeah, that was
fun.
Oh,
my gosh, and I made a mistake. It was like 7 o'clock at night, so I thought, okay, I'll be all right. I'll wear jeans. Oh,
not
yeah.
Florida.
No, it didn't even rain or anything. It wasn't that hot. By the time I got back to the truck, I was soaking wet.
Well, Florida's, especially Orlando, it's stifling because it's landlocked. It's not on the coast.
No.
So when you're in Orlando, and it's, you know, yesterday I took Hunter to this really cool car show in Tampa. We ran around. I got to meet a bunch of people. We talked to a bunch of people. He saw one of the coolest Lamborghinis he ever thought in the world. His car was insane. I mean, it was pretty cool. I don't even know, honestly, why the guy was driving it. If I had a car, I'd be like, it sits in the shop. You look at it.
Put it in the living room.
Bubble around it. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, whatever. But it's cool. But so we were talking to the guy, and Hunter was going nuts about it. Well, then we ended up talking to a guy there that was retired law enforcement. And I asked him, I said, what in the world's going on with this ridiculous super speeder law? Because all you guys are in sports cars. I mean, you guys obviously know what's going on. He goes, this super speeder law is one of the biggest boondoggles we've ever witnessed. He goes, I'm retired now. And he goes, thank God I don't have to deal with this. He said, here's the problem. He said, they made it. They're intentionally doing it to increase more arrests and increase more revenue for the state of Florida. And I said, what's weird, because the wording is ambiguous. Nobody I've talked to in law enforcement even knows how to handle or what to do with it, because some people are saying 30 over at any time, 100 on the interstate, 50 over. And he said, well, here's the problem that I found. He goes, the state of Florida with these FDLE grants is massively increasing the amount of money that they're going to give local law enforcement based on how many arrests they make with a super speeder. So you've got some of these local agencies now that are coming in. They're saying, well, if you can show us 25 arrests this year for super speeders, we're going to give you an extra $100,000 grant bonus to combat more speeding. And the number keeps going up and up into the millions of dollars for highway patrol. So what they're doing is they're incentivizing law enforcement to arrest people in order to keep them in the system, get more money for Florida, and then give them more grant money.
And impound the cars.
That's what I found out. The third time you get a ticket for doing 30 over on the interstate or 100 miles an hour, they seize your car. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter if you got a Z06 or a ZR1. They seize your car. I don't understand legally.
Do they give it back or they sell it?
They seize it.
Wow.
They seize the car. So you got a $100,000 Z06. It's our car now. We're stealing your car because you broke a arbitrary number that we decided you're not allowed to go over.
Well, what I told the woman yesterday, the police officers at the church, I told her, I said, you know, the problem is you got a bunch of pencil neck bean counters in Tallahassee.
That's exactly right.
Now, I'm just being real here. And these guys, they go 54 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone.
Correct.
They don't ever speed. They don't speed. They stop at every stop.
They have chauffeurs, dude.
Well, yeah.
And the legislators got chauffeurs, Congress and Senate.
But they don't have to drive, or they have chauffeurs, or they're completely by the book all the time.
Yeah.
Now, the irony to me is I see these police officers flying around over 100 miles an hour all the time.
With no
lights and sirens. But that's okay. And I promise you, if they're a state trooper and they're doing that, they will not get pulled by another state trooper.
No.
Then I see him in the emergency lane going at 70 miles an hour with lights and sirens on. And then you finally go 20 miles, and they never pulled anybody. They just wanted to get out of the traffic.
Well, and here's the factor of what, you know, I was talking to this retired LEO, and he said, here's the problem. He had all the numbers. He knew them. He said, you look at the Autobahn, which is very, very highly maintained with no speed limit in some areas. And he goes, the fatality rate of the Autobahn is like 5 times less than the fatality rate on Interstate 4 in Florida.
I believe that.
He said, it's insane. And he goes, here's why. He goes, they massively enforce going slow in the left lane. He goes, speeding on cars that are made for it with active drivers that are alert is not what caused the accident. It's the people that sit in the left lane doing 65 and a 70 with people having to go around them. You see it's all the time on I-4. And everybody's having to go in the middle lane to pass somebody because they're doing 60 and it's their right to sit in the left lane and make everybody pass them. Well, on a 3-lane highway like that, you got all these different variables. One person changing, the other person changing lane, left lane not moving. And so everything's changing around. The Autobahn, they will ticket you for sitting in the left lane.
And they'll ticket you for passing on the right.
Right. Enormously big tickets. And he goes, the problem is, he goes, we're now starting to arrest people that aren't even criminals because they're doing just 101 and a 70 with the flow of traffic down in South Florida because somebody won't get out of the left lane instead of citing people for causing problems in the left lane. So we're dealing with the law enforcement. It's all over the news. Every single day now on social media, all the local law enforcement, the counties, FHP, they're bragging about who they arrested. I'm not joking. Every single day now, we arrest this guy who's doing 102 and a 70 on I-4 at 2 o'clock in the morning. We caught him. We had our state trooper in a tree stand down the road. We call. No, I'm not joking. It's stupid stuff like that. I mean, I'm being sarcastic. But they'll be hiding up around a tree in a corner with brush on them in a ghillie suit. Like, God, there's somebody on the road. He's doing 101. There's nobody on the road. Get him. Take him straight to jail. And this guy works, you know, at a warehouse. There's nobody on the road. He's trying to go home because he's going to be back at the job site at 8 a.m. in the morning. You know, we got ourselves somebody. We arrested him.
They did something, didn't they? They got somebody.
And then it's like, what was the point? Where was the victim? There's nobody on the road. Now this guy misses work. Now he gets terminated. Now you seized his car. Now he can't get out of impound because he had the $2,000, $3,000. Now he can't make bond. Now he's in jail for 30 days. Now he can't feed his family. Because he was doing 101 on the interstate at 2 o'clock in the morning with nobody on the road, and you sure showed him what a bad person he is. Okay. Yeah, you proved your point, guys. Congratulations. You changed society.
Well,
for the
lady told me yesterday, the police officer told me it was a mess.
That's a fiasco.
She says it's a fiasco. She says the whole law is written.
Which is mandatory arrest.
And what they should say is this. You do 50 miles an hour over the speed limit, you're going to go to jail, mandatory.
That's you start doing 120 on the interstate, you're doing 150, you're moving pretty fast. But if anybody's been on I-4, the average speed's like 80 to 85 most of the time, honestly. And so, I mean, you're talking about a few more miles an hour more, you're going to jail now.
Well, about 6 months ago, I was driving home over on the Polk Parkway. And I told you guys a story. I didn't pay attention. I was going with the flow of traffic, and I was doing 91.
Not abnormal.
I guess he really didn't like me. I don't know what I did to him.
They'll pick and choose. They've said this before. If they see a group of cars, most of them that are going over the speed limit, they'll just pick the nicer looking car or the brighter colored car.
And the funny thing about it is I was doing 26 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Yeah.
Well, 4 more miles an hour, I'd have been put in jail. If this thing had changed. And I remember one time I was going through Georgia, or it may have been Jacksonville. I can't remember if we got into Georgia or South Carolina. And I remember it was so crazy. I was driving a Lexus.
Yeah.
And the guy pulls me over. And I had people passing me. And I said, why are you pulling me? I said, all these people are passing me. And he was honest with me. He goes, because you're driving a Lexus and you can afford the ticket.
So he said.
I looked at him, I said, this is great. You know, give me a Hyundai or something. Maybe they didn't have Hyundais back then. Oh, by the way, Ghislaine Maxwell also said one of the things she said. She basically has turned in the guards so many times for inappropriate behavior and conduct, they're all scared of her.
Ooh.
Because remember, she's super high profile.
So
she tells the attorney tells the media. And the guards get in trouble.
The guards get in trouble.
So they said they all avoided her. They used to try to, you know, make her do what she's supposed to do. They said just let her do whatever she wants.
And they're probably hitting on her, and they're probably messing with her and all kinds of other stuff. She got sick of it. She basically told her attorney every time he came in, these guys are sexually harassing me. Sexual harassment suit, suit, case. All of a sudden, these guys are like, don't even get near her. Don't look at her. She's not even there. And this is another article that's interesting here. And I talked to a couple of guys over the weekend, and it's interesting when you get around some of these guys that are you know, they own their own businesses and they do all this stuff, and a lot of them are awake. I found this topic to be continual across a lot of the maps now, is a lot of these guys and their wives that I've met, they don't allow their children to have any open access to the internet or any social media. Surprise, surprise. I had a whole discussion with like 4 or 5 different guys that were there, and they said, absolutely not. My kids don't have access to this. Well, there's another reason why. Because the social media is getting so crazy on how advanced it is and what data it's showing, lawmakers now are urging Meta to shut down Instagram, Matt, citing harms to children. I didn't even know they had this on Instagram now. So apparently, because most people have their permissions on their phone, which I do not, I keep everything turned off, you know, microphone, a camera, location, everything stays off unless I need it. But because majority of people turn them on and never turn them off, Instagram offers you the ability to turn your active live tracking on. So every time you get on Instagram, it shows everybody that follows you where your location is.
Isn't that dangerous as for kids?
You know how dangerous it is for everybody? Anybody that's got even a moderate profile or a child on there, and you got to go in and turn it off. Now, you got to prove it first, but these kids don't know any better. And it says allowing children to have their real-time location and readily displaying where they're taking pictures to strangers, many of whom may be pedophiles and traffickers, is only going to increase the dangers children face online. The senator said to Zuckerberg, this needs to be immediately abandoned. This feature needs to be blocked now. And I can't say as I disagree with him. And this is the problem, because if you use location sharing, your location is updated whenever you open the app or return to the app. It's been running in the background. You have to turn off the location sharing at any time and basically not allow it to perform that. So again, another reason why I tell all my friends and family and everybody around me, don't let your kids have open access to the internet or social media. I mean, do 12, 13, 14-year-old girls and boys on social media need to be having their location shown to all their followers in real time? Absolutely not.
That's so dangerous.
That's unbelievably dangerous.
Go back to that picture of Zuckerberg. Here's the thing. I had somebody say to me one time, somebody said this to me. This is terrible. They shouldn't have said this to me. They said, he has a face you can walk up and just slap. I mean,
whack.
What is wrong with this guy? Well, you know what he did. You know what he did to his partner. Watch that movie.
Oh yeah,
I mean, he completely threw him under the bus. That's crazy. By the way, Trump now is asking the Supreme Court of the United States to allow profiling in California ICE raids. He wants the ability to arrest anybody who's speaking Spanish or who has a the Trump administration is asking the Supreme Court to allow officers to arrest suspected undocumented immigrants in Southern California because of how they look, what language they're speaking, and what kind of work they're doing. Factors that federal judges found to be baseless and discriminatory. Last month, ruling by the U.S. District Judge Mame Frimpong, my name was Frimpong, I think I would change it, upheld the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, threats upend immigration officials. Liability to enforce the immigration laws of the United States District of California. Dr. John Sauer, the Justice Department Solicitor General, said Thursday in a filing with the Supreme Court, this court should end this attempted judicial usurpation of immigration enforcement functions. So basically, if they look like they're Hispanic, because this is exactly what you said David said the other day about his stucco crew. They have Hispanic guys going into Home Depot, getting some
stucco material that they're running out of.
And then all of a sudden they're arrested in the parking lot and they don't come back to work because they got arrested.
Yeah, they're gone.
Because they're Hispanic.
Yeah.
They may
get released. If they're legit, they may not get released.
You know, the thing about it is,
that's an issue.
Well, you know, I mean, let's arrest all guys who look like they're German just because they're German.
Yeah.
That'd be me and Austin. Okay. And but let's go ahead and just arrest them and haul them off and question them and detain them because they look like they're German. And you think, well, come on, Ted, you're stretching. Okay, stop. I know I'm being a little bit overly dramatic on this, but here's the thing. If a person is in this country and they're working and they're producing and they're productive, why don't they go arrest a Spanish-looking MS-13 gang member?
There you go.
Leave these guys alone.
You know, here's the irony. It's kind of a joke, you know, I made with David about it. And he goes, you know, you got these guys that are going into Home Depot. They're grabbing some extra mortar mix. Oh, we know they got to be illegal. They're working. They're doing something. We got to go arrest them.
That?
Well, then they see a whole group of guys on the sidewalk with MS-13 tattooed on their face. ICE goes, we're not sure about them. We should verify to make sure they're illegal before we arrest them.
Well, why don't they go to these rallies where they're flying the Puerto Rican flag? Or the
Puerto Rico's a district. Oh, I do. That's a district. Well,
and I know that Puerto Ricans aren't going to get arrested for being illegal, but don't fly the Puerto Rican flag if you're in the United States. If you
fly
like
the American flag.
Well, a lot of Americans are moving to Puerto Rico now, which is what they wanted, because they have like a 3% tax rate.
I think Costa Rica's too is another one.
I don't know about Costa Rica, but I know Puerto Rico. So people have to pay all that income tax. So a lot of guys go, I'll never go back to the United States. Yeah. There's too many taxes. By the way, the suffering of student borrowers. The news blasted all over social media, confirming the sufferings of an entire generation of degree holders. Student loan delinquency rates have hit over 10% now.
Woo.
It's a 21-year high, and it worsens with a $1.7 trillion debt crisis. Posts on social media reveal graduating students with debts that are rising higher despite high monthly payments due to dramatic changes in interest rates.
Yep.
The average student loan now is between 6 to 17%.
Jeez.
Is that incredible or what? And it talks about it, and they've got a really good argument in here, and they say that basically if you're 18 years old, 19 years old, 21 years old, don't pretend like you have to live like your parents do.
That's a fact.
Okay? Because a lot of these, the reason they get the loans is because they want to have the same lifestyle they had when they were living at home.
Yeah.
They would have this fancy apartment with this fancy car, and they're making all these payments on it. And it says don't do that. You know, it said, absolutely don't do it. He says, don't allow yourself to get caught up in that. Don't do it. It says, for those who are getting married after college, there should be no hopes of immediately living the high life like their parents did.
It's true.
20 to 30 years to get there. That's a fact.
It's a fact.
The young people should and must prioritize paying off their debt, never accumulating more. Revolving credit cards are out of the question. The cheapest apartment rents are necessary, and everything you buy should be from thrift stores and eBay and never retail. And I think discounted stuff's pretty important to get. A young couple who takes this way of life will not only build a strong and lasting relationship, they will build a financial future together. The seeming deprivation comes from a bond that is formed between young couples. Now, listen to this. This is what Sharon and I went through. I'm going to read this again. This is very important. If you want to build a really good marriage and you really, really want to have her as your best friend and you want to have a true love, listen to this. A young couple who takes on this way of life and they're frugal will not only build a strong and lasting marriage and relationship, they will build a financial future together. The seeming deprivation becomes a bond that is forged between the young couple. They should entirely ignore their friends who are climbing on the socioeconomic ladder too quickly with fancy cars and club memberships and dismiss Instagram postings of vacations as far-flung places. This is all nonsense. If one or the other partner is in a relationship, does not understand this, and seeks to inhabit the same lifestyle from whence they come from their parents, the relationship will be doomed.
That's well said.
Living even slightly above one's means over a long period of time could lead to financial and personal disaster and a broken home. Living frugally means developing a habit of foregoing consumption and doing without in exchange for what you have as far as a marriage and a home. This is all the more true if a young couple is planning on having children. It's simply not possible to maintain two full-time incomes as moms quickly discover their primary obligation as caretakers and the career path faces massive disruption. Child care is unaffordable. Nannies are impossible to pay, even if it's available. And so the best financial decision could be to move to one income. The debt is a factor. Mothers have found that when they use nannies, they use up their entire paycheck to pay the nanny. It has also been true for the worst of every new generation must build a life for themselves. The notion that children would enter adulthood with the same standard of living they left is the delusion of a very recent origin. It is now ending up quite rudely. The sooner young people can develop the spending and saving habits of their great-grandparents, the better off they'll be over the long term. As for the student loans, two are rather new developments. 50 years ago, it was common for students to work their way through school. That's what I did, paying for tuition. My dad helped me, too, in graduate school. Housing, books, and food. If they were able to do this, they did something else. Today, working your way through college and paying bills is inconceivable. Paradoxically, the expansion of student loans only ended up driving up student costs and tuition costs and made the loans necessary. Now, one more thing about this. The reason some of these college professors, back when I was in school, the college professor made $30,000, $40,000 a year. That's a fact. That's all they made. If they were really high level in the high education, they make 50 or 60. That's all they make. Some of these guys are making $300,000 and $400,000 a year. And the reason they're making so much money is because of student loans. Because the government is subsidizing the schools through student loans. And so they say, well, he has a PhD from Harvard. Therefore, he has to be worth $300,000 a year. So we're going to pay you $300,000 a year. Well, that means tuition's got to go up.
Yeah.
The cost of the school has to go up. The cost of the college education has to go up. All of that. That's why I'm going to say this to you if you're a young person right now. Do dual enrollment. If you're 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old and you can pass a college exam as far as knowing how to read and knowing history and mathematics and, you know, in English, and you can start taking dual enrollment classes, even if they're online, for free because the state's going to pay for them, that's the way to do it. If you take the classes for free for your basic educational degree, for an AA degree, you're 2 years ahead of your college when you graduate high school, and you have no student loans.
Let me add this, because the dual enrollment is something that's massively undervalued, but a lot of people are figuring out now. Let me explain it to you. You're getting high school equivalent credits for your high school
and college,
and you're getting college credits at the same time. You're double dipping, and they're completely okay with it.
And they're free.
And they're free. There's no reason not to do it. You're getting, they have it with a collegiate high school at Polk Community College here in Florida, where you literally are taking the classes that count as your high school, that count as your college, and the state pays for them. I don't know about you guys, but I try to get a little bit of these tax dollars back that we get absolutely just stolen,
you know,
from
every year. Yeah, you know, the best example.
Yeah, most states do this.
The best example is, you know, your brother, Harris.
Yeah.
Okay, Harrison started doing dual enrollment when he's like 14, 15 years old.
Yeah, he did it real early.
He did it right. And so he got extra classes in. And then what happened is he basically went into the collegiate high school program. And by the time he was a senior in high school, he was a senior in college.
Yeah.
And what was funny is when the last semester he signed up for like 19 hours, they basically kicked it back from the state of Florida.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they said, we're not going to pay for this. This kid, 17 years old, is taking advanced fourth year classes.
Senior level
and that
classes.
Wasn't the intent of this. And well, Polk County, Polk State College paid for it anyhow. They went ahead and took care of it.
We appealed it.
And
yeah.
That's right. And he graduated valedictorian at the collegiate class. And the crazy part about it is, so when he's 18 years old, he gets his bachelor's degree.
Well, it's
paid for.
Here's the issue. And I'll tell everybody this because I watched this a lot in my college when I grew up. Is this concept has eluded a lot of kids now. In college, let me put this real clear. You're supposed to suffer. It's supposed to suck sometimes. It's not supposed to be one giant hoorah-rah party 24-7 where all you do is have fun and go to class and run around with friends and enjoy yourself.
Spend borrowed money.
Yeah. It's supposed to suck sometimes. You're supposed to be eating basic food. You're supposed to be staying at home sometimes on the weekend to save money. You're supposed to be working a job. You're supposed to be trying to pay your bills. It's supposed to do that to you.
It's supposed to be a learning curve.
It's supposed to be a learning curve. It's not supposed to be, well, I got me a $150,000 loan this semester. I'm buying me a car, and I'm getting me a penthouse on the beach, and I'm going to hang out with my friends all weekend, and I'm going to pay for everybody's tab. Seen it, watched it, know the kids that did it.
Well, not 150 grand a semester.
Well, no. Well, yeah, some of the schools they get some.
Well,
crazy.
Some of them think 100,000 a year though.
I mean, he fine. That my one buddy. He was like 130,000-140,000. He graduated with in debt by the time he did it. It wasn't every year, but that's the problem. Is now exactly what you just said.
If they even graduate,
that's if they the graduate, that's the big one.
No, I know people who have 20,000-30,000 of student loans,
they never
even graduated.
See what happens then with social media and all these platforms and the movies and all this stuff. These kids think, well, college is supposed to be one gigantic party 24/7, and I'm not supposed to do anything. I'm supposed to take a student loan and live off of it, enjoy myself, and graduate, and everything's going to be great. When I get done, I'll pay it off. They don't realize the interest rate, and they don't realize how it works, and they don't realize how the real world is. And even if they do start a company and work a job or make money, and all of a sudden, I got to come up with $1,000 a month now just to pay this for the next, 10, 15 years.
30 years.
Yeah, depends on the note.
And the crazy part about it is 80% of the people who graduate from college don't even use the degrees in the job they finally end up in.
No.
80%. And that's because they major in stuff that's not marketable. You can't monetize it. You know, if you have a biology degree, it's useless unless you go to medical school.
Pretty much, yeah.
Or dental school or whatever. You know, it's a useless degree. Unless you want to be a biology unit trainee with the state of Florida and count dead fish in the panhandle.
Yeah, you can be a professor.
Well, then you got to get a PhD.
Yeah.
Because you got to go up and up and up.
Same thing.
Again, and so now you got more student loans. And they still don't pay the biology professors very much unless they graduated from Harvard or someplace. Yeah. They just don't do it. And so the problem that develops is that you think you're going to make all this money because you have a college degree. I remember this one time I had this lady working for me. She went to a school over there in Dade City. She's a marginal employee at best. Marginal. In fact, she was actually awful. And I remember she got her college degree. She brings it over and she puts the diploma down. Said, now I want a raise. She actually did this. And looked at her and I said, no. I said, you know, I try not to fire you every week. It's awful. You know. And I said, I'm not giving you a raise.
Now you're emboldened.
Oh, yeah. Now you. But she was serious. And she was so proud of her little diploma.
What was that one? Now there'd be no living with them.
Oh my gosh! And you know, so no, it was crazy. But she really thought. See, and that happens a lot. Well, the reason I haven't succeeded is I don't have a college degree. It's simply not true. Now, if you're going to go to college, get you something that's a professional degree that you can get licensed, like become a nurse or a doctor or an attorney or an engineer, you know, or whatever, or an accountant. That's the kind of degree you can use that you can monetize because you can get licensed with the state and set up your own practice. But if you're going to be, or you can be a school teacher, but they don't make much money either. But the reality is don't be all majoring in stuff like underwater basket weaving and stupid stuff like Black History Month. And I mean, now don't fuss at me about that. But it's
my,
the truth.
My all-time favorite ones. I have a bachelor's degree in gender studies. Cool story. Leave. Yeah. You're fired. Yeah, you're that would be my response to anybody that came to me with that at a job. I'm like, okay,
and the other thing I remember, because I graduated, I have these four college degrees behind me, right? You know, I'm getting out of college, and it's time for me to get up to the plate and hit a home run. And I remember everybody looked at my education. They go, wow. You're overeducated.
Overqualified.
And I said, well, and the problem is you have no experience in this field. So you have all these degrees, but you have no experience. And I'm like, well, I'd like to get some experience. Well, no, we don't do that.
That's the irony that you run into.
And so that's when I started Health Masters. I said, you know what? I'm just going to do my own thing here. This is not going to work. And it worked out well for me. I mean, but, you know, the point was, first 4 or 5 years, even with Health Masters, I was working 100-hour work weeks, Austin, and we weren't making any money at all.
Well, it builds grit when you suffer like that. Not everything's supposed to be a party. And the problem is you see a lot of these kids that their parents continually just feed them enormous amounts of money, or they have these giant trust funds in their early 20s, and you talk to people that have to deal with them, and they absolutely hate being around them. They're a nightmare because they think they're entitled to everything because they're a trust fund kid, and they get $100,000 a month out of the trust. And also, I want this, and I want this, and I want this. And you're like, but no. Well, that's mine. Like, you're 22. Shut up. Nobody cares about your opinion. You know, it's like, whatever. Now, this is a pretty, I'm going to switch gears.
And that's why so many are angry in their early 20s because their life didn't turn out the way they thought it would because they don't have their parents' lifestyle.
That's
exactly right.
Well, and the social media does the same thing. Is you get the kids that get so obsessed with following social media 24/7 that they don't even realize that most of social media, 90% of it's fake. Instagram's not a real place. And most of the people that actually are successful that are on the social media platforms, it was an absolute struggle to get there. And it was blood, sweat, tears pushing through to grind it where they're at, but you see the end game. You don't see all the blood. You don't see all the cuts. You don't see all the stitches. All you see is the end on it. So everybody thinks, oh, they did this, and they're in their 30s. Well, I should be there already. I should have this. I should do this.
In their 20s, I feel.
In their 20s, they see it.
One more quick thing about FSU and LSU and football players. Okay, because a lot of these football players are getting paid now.
Oh, yeah.
LSU football player JT Lindsey is arrested for harboring murder suspect in his dorm room. So just when you have nothing else to do when you're a college football player and you have a dorm, you make sure you put a murder suspect in there with you to hide them. Louisiana State University freshman running back JT Lindsey was arrested on Friday and hit with two felony counts of accessory after the fact in the case of a second-degree murder, according to reports. Prosecutor Kay Cuter said that Lindsey harbored two suspects in the murder case, Shanmel Jacobs, 17, and Keldred Jordan, 18, who were being sought by police in the murder in May for the murder of 17-year-old Corey Brooks, according to the New York Post.
Man. Really murdering each other for this.
Who knows? The drug. The school suspended Lindsey from the team ahead on Friday when the player turned himself in to face his charges. He's at bond set at $5,000, released later that evening. The Ellis police noted that they located the two suspects in his apartment for his dorm apartment at the hall. In addition to this, Jacobs had Lindsey's LSU ID on his person, great, and was able to provide Lindsey's personal PIN code, great, which allowed him to come and go from the apartment and dorm building. So he was just harboring him. When reviewing record surveillance footage, Lindsey can be seen in the dorm building with Jacobs and Jordan. So here's the thing. Show me your friends and I will show you your future. This kid is a freshman football player at LSU,
yeah.
Probably on full scholarship, probably had a great future, maybe even in the NFL.
He's getting expelled now.
And now he's going to get expelled.
Oh, he's expelled and charges, probably.
Well, and he'll probably be dropped off the team.
We'll drop, yeah, oh, immediately.
Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. I mean, you got to, guys, listen to me. If you're listening to your young person, don't hang out with scum. Well, you can't be calling my friends scum. Look, if they're not scum, they're not scum. Then don't take it personal. If they're scum, they're scum. If they want to go out and get drunk every weekend, or they want to use drugs every weekend, or they want to act like the
or
fool.
They want to go murder 17-year-olds.
They want to go murder people and go rob, you know, convenience stores. You might not want to hang out with them. Because it's gonna, I told you that story about that guy that time in the car with me, and I told him to take me back to my car because they started doing drugs in the car. And I said, no, you take me back to the car. I'm not going to do this. Before it was over with, he got killed down in Costa Rica. They killed him. The doggone mob had a hit put on him, and they had him. They murdered him down there. The point is, show me your friends. Show me the people you associate with. I'll show you your future. Stay with people that are high caliber. Don't associate with scum of the life. Don't be doing that, guys. It's unbelievably bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, it goes, what is it, Proverbs 1:11? It says, if they say, come along with us, let him wait for innocent blood. Let's ambush some harmless soul.
You might want to step
away from them.
Yeah.
Stay away from it. You know, and we've all been around people like that where they got these real weird ideas, and all of a sudden they sound kind of good at first, and you kind of go, this doesn't sound right, though. You start getting that feeling. I mean, we've all been in that situation where you start getting that gut feeling. You're just like, God, my stomach's not feeling right. This is weird. This doesn't feel good. Take a step back and stay out of it. You know, if you open a door, or you know, people always talk about doors shut and doors shut and doors shut. If you're trying to do something or something's occurring or you're hanging around with people and every time you do it, another door shuts, you probably shouldn't be around there. You try to force that door open, another door shuts. Maybe you should just look at the top of the door. The door says, do not enter, biohazard, death inside. You probably just want to stop trying to open the door. So many people go, the doors are shutting from me. I don't know why. I don't know why I shouldn't do this. Just take a look at everything and step back. Because in some cases,
no,
man, I'm going to be involved.
No, you're right. If a kid basically is 13, 14 years old and they're a good kid, the world is their oyster. They can do anything they want. They start making choices and decisions. Doors start getting closed in front of them very quickly.
Very quickly.
Oh, so you went to juvenile detention. And then about a quarter of the people are going to say, well, we'll pass on this.
Yeah.
You know, you got arrested for something, another quarter pass, and you close it up.
Well, you get those little gifts. So say you went to juvenile detention when you're 14. But you get expunged when you're 18. Okay, I got past that. What else? And you get arrested again when you're 19. Oh, gosh, okay. Well, you get that covered up, you get dismissed, well, then you get arrested again. You start hanging out with this, then you start getting charged, or you start hanging out with people that get charged with it. And all of a sudden, you're 19, 20, 21 years old, and you go, man, how did that happen so quick? It was decision after decision after decision. Rarely does the earth open up and swallow your entire home, and you have no homeowner's insurance, and everything's gone in one swift move. Rarely does that happen. Now, in some states,
it's a little failing.
Some states may happen. Some places may happen. Some event may happen rarely. But it's the little things over and over and over and over and over again. And then not taking a step back and going, man, this is a bad decision. I probably don't need to do this again. I probably need to calm down with this behavior. Maybe I don't need to do this. Maybe I do need to recognize what I'm doing wrong.
Maybe I've gotten super speeder arrested twice now. Next time I take my car.
Maybe I just need to buy a Hyundai or a pickup truck.
Put a lift on with big tires. But,
yeah.
Real slow.
Run 70 miles an hour max. I'll just stay in the right lane with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and it's true.
Maybe you just need to realize that there's certain behavioral patterns. It's like what we always ask people. What am I doing? What's it doing to me? And is it okay? Those three questions.
And I told Buddy that the other day. He was asking about something. He was trying to figure out what to do with his girlfriend that he was dating. And I asked him, I said, Dad always says this one, you know, three questions. And I said, it's a pretty good way to get your answer pretty quickly. Now, it may not answer everything. You may have to do a little bit more research and analysis on it. But if you ask yourself that, what am I doing? I'm doing this, or I'm trying to date this girl. I'm trying to make it work. What's it doing to me? What's wearing me out, and it's wearing me thin, and I'm getting stressed out, and I'm really negative now, and I'm trying to make it work, and there's all this stuff going on. Then the next question is that okay? No, it's not okay. Well, buddy, you just got your answer. Because sometimes, certain times, certain relationships, certain businesses, certain things you do, you want them to work. You try as hard as you can to make them work, but at a certain point in time, you got to take a step back and say, as much as I love this, as much as I want this, as much as I'm trying to get this, like I said earlier, sometimes doors close in front of you for a reason. Sometimes Christ closes a door and everybody's trying to jam it. I want to make this work. I want this relationship to work. I want this business to work. I want this to work. And all of a sudden you take a step back and go, okay, look at it. Then above the door it says biohazard, do not enter, death inside. And you're like, oh, maybe that's why the door's closed.
The problem is, what if that's the only door left?
Because of all the decisions you make.
Because of all the choices, yeah. And see, remember, you have something, you know, and we have something, and we all have this available to us. It's the Holy Spirit, especially if you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. And even if you're not saved, the Holy Spirit can still convict you.
Yeah.
And they can make you think, well, maybe I shouldn't ought to do that. Maybe I shouldn't be in the car with these people. So, you remember that old song? You probably remember. I think it was like Three Dog Night. My mama told me not to come.
No,
I've gone and seen things I should never have done. I'm in a place now, this is awful. You know.
Well, and what will happen is, see, especially when you're younger and you start getting involved with too many people and too many things you don't want to be involved in, you'll stop getting those checks. You'll stop getting those gut feelings, and you'll start doing stuff, and you don't even realize it's wrong. You don't have a problem with it. And that's the point in time you really got to start addressing stuff. But in other news, this is what I want to cover. This is a really big deal here. The AAP, the Pediatrics, American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Medical Association, and six other major medical associations will no longer participate in advising the CDC on vaccine policy. This is huge, guys. Listen to me on this. The problem with it was majority of these agencies, like the Academy for Pediatrics, they were massively compromised with conflict of interest to companies like Moderna and Pfizer. So what happened is CDC would have an advisory panel. This advisory panel would consist of certain members of these groups, the pediatrics group, the AMA, and so forth. And so these associations were informed last week that their vaccine experts were disinvited from the work groups that report to the CDC's Vaccine Advisory Committee. They said essentially that these groups were deciding which vaccine should be recommended to the public, who should take them, and how often. And recommendations helped determine which vaccines would be covered for the Vaccine Children's Program. And mandated for states and daycare and school attendance.
Wow.
These groups, American Academy for Pediatrics, they literally had the pull to come in. And if all these groups colluded and they told the CDC, hey, this just shot needs to be on the schedule. CDC went, you guys are the expert. Chevron doctrine, basically, and it's not really necessarily what they're using. They're saying, but you guys, the experts, we'll follow your lead on it, and we'll let you guys determine what shots need to be on there. The problem with it is they said the special interest groups, and they're therefore expected to have a bias based on their constituency and population that they represent, according to the Department of Human Health and Services with R.F. Kennedy Jr., meaning these groups are financially incentivized by the pharmaceutical companies that they're essentially representing, and then they're turning around and telling the CDC what to have on the market.
Well, because what happens is, again, we talked about it the other day, they're financially incentivized if X amount of
Blue
kids.
Blue Cross, Blue Shield is a perfect example.
And, you know, so if you know, 80% is you're basically vaccinated, so then they tell everybody, they recommend it, that everybody gets vaccinated, and so they push the laws through.
Yep.
And so that's the problem. They did the same thing to chiropractic. They tried to put chiropractors out of business back in the 70s and 80s because they hated chiropractic so much because it was an alternative form of medicine and it was interfering with the allopathic medical model as far as the pain suffering model that you have to use drugs for.
And the American Heart Association, they did the same thing with the FDA. They came in, the American Heart Association came in all of a sudden and said, hey, by the way, we've determined by no significant research that everybody needs to have cholesterol under 200 at all times.
They went under 100.
Oh, yeah, now it is now. The big one was 200 because it was like 210, 220 before that. It came in and said, it needs to be below 200. So they said, the FDA, you guys need to recommend.
It used to be 300.
Yeah, you guys, statins to everyone. Oh, and by the way, we're now recommending that statins are encouraged for people, even if it's below 200, to help prevent a possible cardiac event in the next 40 years.
And the thing that's crazy, they found out if you take statins for 37 years, you increase your life expectancy like 2 days.
Yeah.
Those are the real numbers. 2 days.
No,
and because all of the other side effects associated with statins. In fact, on our book, Breakthrough Health, that we put together about 10 years ago now, 15 years ago, that we listed the top 10 drugs never to use. There's still a few copies of that book left if you wanted at the office, but there's only a few left. And one of the first drug we tell people never to put in their body are statin drugs. Yeah, and then ask yourself a question on this. What am I doing? I'm trying to treat high cholesterol. Okay, what's it doing to me? It's causing skeletal muscle necrosis, and it's causing kidney failure. Is that okay? No, that's not okay. Do the same thing with drugs. I want to read you this. Mama told me not to come, Three Dog Night, lyrics. Want some whiskey in your water, sugar in your tea? What's all these crazy questions they're asking me? This is the craziest party there could ever be. Don't turn on the lights because I don't want to see. Mama told me not to come. This ain't no way to have fun. Open the window, let some air into this room. I think I'm almost choking from the smell of stale perfume. And that cigarette you're smoking about scare me half to death. Open up the window, sucker. Let me catch my breath. Mama told me not to come. The radio is blasting. Someone's knocking at the door. I'm looking at my girlfriend. She's passed out on the floor. I've seen so many things I ain't ever seen before. Don't know what it is, and I don't want to see no more. Mama told me not to come. Mama told me not to come. She said, that ain't the way to have fun, son. That ain't the way to have fun, no. That ain't the way to have fun. Listen to me, Mama. So, you know, it's the thing. If you find yourself in a situation where you are being invited to stuff like this, which this stuff still goes on today. This isn't something Three Dog Night did back in the 70s. Avoid the people that go to these places. Avoid the people that do these things. And just say, no, that's not my thing. I don't do that. Walk away.
It well said what you said. You made a comment earlier. You said, you know, you may get to a door and it's blocked off. You know, there's also a point in time, in most cases, even though some people may have made some bad decisions, you can back out of the one door you came in.
Turn around backwards.
Back up. and say, okay, let me back up until I get another couple doors. Mm-hmm. If you're doing this and you're hanging around people that are involved in really, really nefarious stuff, and you still got the ability to back up, you can still change your friends. You don't have to associate with the same ones. It's kind of like guys even that I've met before, guys that have been in prison, they've been incarcerated for a while, and they get out and they say, I don't ever want to be around those people again. I don't want to go back to prison again. I'm changing everything. You see that's happened with certain pastors. They've been in jail. They've been arrested. They've had a certain event happen. They go, I made that mistake. I admit I made that mistake, and I'm not doing it again. I learn from my mistakes. The same thing happens with diet and health. In most cases, if you're having a bunch of health problems, you're having a bunch of cardiovascular problems and blood pressure problems, you can take a step back and address it and say, okay, what could be causing this? Am I inactive? Am I not drinking enough water? Am I dehydrated? Am I eating something? Am I taking something? What is it, and what is it doing to me, and is that okay? And you can say, okay, what am I going to do now? I want to start doing this. I want to start doing this and making changes. I'm going to start changing my diet. I'm going to stop bringing ice cream to the house. I'm going to stop eating so much dairy. There's all types of things you can do to change your lifestyle. You don't have to keep going on the same path. You can take an exit at some point in most cases. And so, again, that's why we encourage everybody on this show to really look at what you're doing, especially with overall health and diet. Because now look at this. Everybody that was told, you've got to get the shot. You've got to get the shot. The federal agencies now are told to expunge all employee COVID vaccination records. Agencies may not use any individual's vaccine status in any employment-related decisions. It is now illegal for federal agencies to hire or fire you based on your COVID-19 vaccine status. They made it illegal now. Let's backtrack 4 years real briefly. Do you remember what they did to everyone with psychological warfare on the mainstream media?
Oh, yeah.
How they told everyone, if you didn't get the shot, you were a super spreader. Mm-hmm. If you didn't get the shot, you were a grandma killer. That it was a epidemic. It was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Do you remember how many times you heard that crap, even from people out? I remember it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Everyone's unvaccinated, spreading it. You're a super spreader. It's funny because I feel great. I'm not sick. All my friends that aren't getting the shot aren't sick, and everybody's healthy. But you got to get the shot if you want to keep your job. Now we've watched all these individuals forced to do this from a tyrannical government dictatorship back then to now we've done a full 180 saying federal agencies are expunging employee records with COVID-19 status. This is why I tell people, in situations when people start telling you, you have to do this right now. You have to do this deal right now. This is the best car deal you're going to get. You need to sign this right now. We're giving you a great deal, and you need to do it right now. I don't necessarily want to do it right now. I don't know if this is a great deal.
Walk away.
Walk away for a day or two. I promise you, in most cases, if you've got something that's having to be done right this second, if somebody's pressuring you to do it, it is not going to hurt one bit to take an extra day or two or three or four or five sometimes to pray about it, sit at night on it, and think about it, or get other counsel. Ask other people involved that are more knowledgeable on the topic. Talk to some people that have been involved with it. Most of the time, certain situations that you encounter are not new to the world. They've already happened. Majority of the stuff that you're experiencing, that you're stressed out about, or you may have a problem with, or you're fighting, or you're battling, somebody else has already gone through it on the other side. Talk to somebody and get some advice and get some counsel on it and make your decisions based on an educated understanding of the topic. That is super clear. Because now look at this. All these people that did all this stuff for these shots and did it because they were told to do so, now the agencies are having to literally delete all this data. And it makes me wonder, you know, it also makes me wonder with this, if some of this data on side effects and other issues is going to get deleted with this, if it's going to get expunged, or it's just going to be vaccination status record, so you can't go in and do any type of trials or clinical studies. Do you think about that? Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're deleting all employee vaccination records.
Well, they don't want to show the correlation between
that's
that and heart
exactly
disease.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Mm-hmm. So you have this entire database now that's going to get deleted, mm-hmm, where people got one shot, two shot, three shot, four, mm-hmm, shot, five shot, and it's going to disappear now. So you're not going to be able to compare and contrast it to any other database.
All that data. Well, what happened is the data didn't turn out the way they wanted it to, and
that's
now they want
exactly
to cover
right.
it up.
That's what this is starting to look like to me when I was reading about it.
I never thought about that. You're right.
I'm glad federal agencies aren't doing this, enforcing it. But now, you got to think about it. Every federal agency has data on every single person that got the shot, how many shots they got, when they got the shot, the date and time they got
probably
the shot.
Probably
the batch codes. Yeah. And now this whole database is delete, gone.
Well, they want to prove to everybody that they had no side effects. Can't do it when the facts are in your face. Oh, by the way, here's a side effect. making a horrible automobile. Tesla's shutting down its AI supercomputer as staff leaves in droves to join the competitor. As sales continue to plummet with Tesla worldwide, giving up a building in which houses a supercomputer for the vision processing as part of its advanced driver advanced system. As Bloomberg reports, the head of the project dubbed Dojo, in which Elon Musk used to hype up immensely, is leaving the company. The team has already lost around 20 workers, a separate data center firm that's been poaching former Tesla executives. The rest of the team will reportedly be reassigned to other data projects. Considering that Musk has refocused the company efforts on robo-taxi service that relies on computer visions, it is not necessarily confidence-inducing. Musk once called Dojo a beast, but admitted last year that he had to come to think of Dojo as a long shot because it's not something that is high probability. Here's the not the high probability. We don't have the infrastructure to plug up the cars.
Right.
It doesn't exist. It's not there. You haven't. If everybody went to these cars right now and all gasoline vehicles came off the market.
Everybody plugged all their cars in at night.
Well, not even that. Everybody riding bicycles because they're on a plug.
That's exactly right.
You know, now we got one that one listener is brilliant. He set up his own plugging station.
Well, he's got, I think, battery system with solar panel.
Yeah.
But that's great. But the problem is if you have tried to do it on a mass scale. Oh. It's too difficult to do with trying to run it. But he's got his whole system dialed in for him.
Well, now we got all these tariffs coming in on all solar panels and all the rest.
That's
of
true.
He's going through the roof as far as cost.
Because most of the solar panels are made in China.
But quite frankly, the Tesla cars were a concept that were brought out too soon before the infrastructure was put into place. Nobody wants to have a golf cart run out of gas on the interstate.
I don't necessarily think that the concept and the platforms were too soon. I think that they were never given the proper time and energy to let the market in essentially market acceptance. They were forced on everybody, so to speak.
Well, what happened is about 10 years ago, remember when Volkswagen got fined for their diesel engine technology, that they were doing that on purpose to get the people to stop buying diesels that were getting 60 miles per gallon.
Because they were getting recalled.
I had one in Germany. It was getting 60 miles per gallon. And so now none of the car manufacturers, they don't put them in passenger cars anymore.
And what they did, too, the reason why
they were three-cylinder diesels.
They did that as an example to scare all the manufacturers in the entire country. Because now all of a sudden manufacturers went, holy crap, what if we have some weird glitch in our ECU and they don't meet the EPA standards and they ban all these vehicles and now we have all these fines? Okay. But we're going to get billions of dollars in green energy subsidies to make EVs because this is the new way. So they went in and tried to push a market that wasn't there for consumers that didn't exist on a financially unstable product that had no ability to maintain its value. The depreciation schedule, the curve on those electric cars is insane how fast they drop. They never gave them time in the market to adjust.
They don't adjust after 10 years are worthless.
Right. But see, if they did that organically and let people just buy them over time and say, okay, you know what? A couple people lost money, whatever. Okay. But they forced everybody to buy them, started banning all this stuff, started giving all these subsidies, started financially incentivizing people to buy them. And it made a market that didn't exist. It artificially inflated it with money that wasn't real. It was just propped up funny money. It wasn't true organic economic business.
Well, no, but that's what the government did. They threw $7 trillion into the COVID stimmy checks.
And a lot of that went into green energy.
And a lot of it didn't go to the people. They didn't give us the money.
No.
We, the people, didn't get that.
Those little $600, $700 stimulus checks that some people got, that was abysmal, bro.
And remember, when Volkswagen, I want to know this. I want to know who ended up, how Volkswagen raised all that.
$700 stimulus checks that some people got, that was abysmal, bro.
I want to know who ended up, how Volkswagen raised all that, largest car companies in the world, but now who owns them? Because somebody had to come up with $20 billion.
The car company like that's not that liquid on a fine. Because remember, that wasn't, we got to pay money back on a loan. That was straight up, we're fining you, and you got to pay us money because we found something that we didn't like.
They had hundreds of acres of these cars sitting there they couldn't sell.
I don't even know what they've done. I haven't checked on it in years. Last time I checked, they were buying them
back from the consumer.
Remember that?
Because during the startup, they had to turn the emissions thing off a little tiny bit so the engine would warm up.
And now here's the irony. Now, all those emission regulations going back to 2008 now are all being deleted and retroactively removed now.
That's Volkswagen got hit with $20 billion.
Are they going to get a refund check?
And nobody runs diesel engines in the cars anymore.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, I got to pray for you guys in church yesterday. It was great. I love you guys. Thank you for your support. If it wasn't for you guys being here with us, it simply wouldn't work with us being on the air like this. And I hope you don't mind us doing, like, today's kind of a fireside chat show, giving you guys some advice, especially if you're kids and you got students coming up and college coming up. just bear with us. Sometimes we'll cover stuff like this because it's important that people understand this stuff. Because Austin and I learned a lot of this stuff from a guy by the name of Jim Rohn.
Yeah.
R-O-H-N. Way back when. I got him started on the Jim Rohn stuff, you know, gosh, 30 years ago.
Some of the stuff we experiment. I mean, it's the whole thing with, like, dual enrollment, that was an experiment with me. I didn't know what I was doing. You didn't know. That's the first time you messed with it. We were just trying to trial and error. We found out it worked.
Now the state of Florida's dialed it in.
Now the state of Florida's really dialed it in. And so, again, guys, you need anything, please give us a call. We try to keep everybody up to date on everything. Vitamin C powder, product of the week. You'll like it. Try it. Tastes great. Kids drink it, too. And we got a 10-ounce collagen in. You guys love those. Sticky. So appreciate you guys. Call us if you need anything. 1-800-726-1834. Appreciate y'all. Talk to you again tomorrow as always.
Love you guys.